This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, good morning. You are listening to The Morning Run, 7:05 a.m. on Tuesday, the 13th of September. I'm Shazana Mokhtar with Wang Xiaoning and Philip C. Now, in half an hour, we will discuss whether the EU can come up with a viable solution to address the rising costs of energy before winter sets in. But in the meantime, let's recap how global markets closed yesterday.
The markets all marched onwards in the green positive territory. The US markets Dow up 0.7%, S&P 500 up 1.1%, and the Nasdaq was up 1.3%. Over across in Asia, the Nikkei was up 1.2%, Singapore's STA up 0.4%, FBM KLCA up 0.1%, and both Hong Kong Hang Seng and Shanghai Composite were closed for Mid-Autumn Festival as they chowed down on their mooncakes.
Which we did too, by the way, excuse me.
We didn't need a holiday to eat those mooncakes.
No, we didn't. We don't need a holiday in Malaysia to eat anything.
That's true.
Well, it's another day of green on the board. And for more thoughts on where international markets are heading, on the line with us is Joe Quinlan, Chief Market Strategist at the U.S. Trust Bank of America Private Wealth Management. Joe, good morning. Thanks as always for joining us. Now, Consumer Price Index will be out your time tomorrow at around 8:30 a.m. Are you in the camp that believes inflation has peaked?
I think it has peaked, but it's still very elevated. So rising rents is a big issue, wages. So I think, you know, the markets will be a little happy. I think they're going to be happy with the number below. You know, we're going to trend lower, but we're nowhere near as close to, you know, declaring victory. You know, the Fed has a target of 2%. We're going to be well above that tomorrow at, you know, 9 o'clock in the morning.
So it's not going to change the pace of the Fed rate hike. Are you still expecting 75 bips or 50 bips then at the next FOMC?
I think 75 bips because the hawkish tone so much from Jay Powell, Jackson Hole, and subsequently a lot of the Fed governors following up. So they have to follow through with 75 bips in September. But, you know, that makes us, we're getting closer to the, you know, the terminal rate. We're not there yet, probably early January, February next year, but we're moving closer. So they're still going to be pretty hawkish, I think, going into this next Fed meeting.
But Joe, do you think valuations now are attractive, especially in U.S.?
Especially in Europe, for sure. For Europe, but there, you know, you would hope all the bad news is priced in. That's one reason. That's why they're so attractive here. But, you know, when you talk to the Europeans, maybe, you know, rationing of energy, cutting back on factory production, households are just going to get slammed with higher energy prices, food prices. So I think there's another down leg, but, you know, if you're a long-term investor, not even long-term, if you got a 18-month, 24-month horizon, buy large-cap European stocks, because I do think there's some good value there. But you got to be patient, but now's the time to be building that position.
Joe, I want to bring the conversation to something that happened tonight, which is actually the results on Oracle. I know you can't comment specifically on stocks, but what stands out in their comments is that although earnings met expectations, US dollar strength is working against them. Is this going to be a trend we can expect for more corporates going forward?
I think great question in the sense that Q3 were set up for, you know, not only is the dollar strong, so that hurts the foreign earnings, but demand, global demand is very weak as well, particularly in China, notably in Europe as well. So I think the dollar pain carries forward into Q3, but we're expecting the dollar not to roll over, but to peak, right? The dollar's overvalued. That's one of the most overvalued assets right now. That's because Jay Powell is so aggressive and the rest of the world's so weak. That's going to start to alleviate. The closer the Fed gets to its peak in raising interest rates and the world economy recovers into 23, the dollar will roll over. So, but there's some pain coming in the corporate sense in Q3, but that should be priced in, and it's going to be a familiar tune that's going to be played out over the next couple of weeks.
And, you know, as you said, right, currency seems to be the connecting bind between all these markets. But can I get your perspective how correlated U.S. markets are with Asian markets? You know, the past 3-4 days, we've seen both upward trajectory, right? But do you think that correlation ends very soon?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing for, like, where you're sitting in Malaysia, Southeast Asia, more correlated with China, you know, whether you like it or not, that's just reality. I mean, the U.S. leads globally, but when you get into the regional flows and the optimism and confidence, it's going to be China. And I do think there's going to be some optimism, right or wrong, built into China reflating after the party Congress in October. So I think that's starting to be priced in the market. That's going to give a little bit of a more of a lift to Southeast Asia. And then I'm not sure where you are in the pandemic, but you know, we're still seeing, you know, Japan open, you know, post-pandemic, more travel services picking up. I think that's going to be a tailwind for your markets heading into 23 and beyond. I think that's a big story. China reflation and more of an endemic than a pandemic is going to, I think, help boost your markets into 23 and beyond.
Okay, Joe, I want to get into the specifics though. So if you're looking at Asia, are we looking more specifically at North Asia, so looking at markets like Japan and China, versus Southeast Asia or ASEAN?
You know, I still like commodities. I like travel and tourism. Mm. So I'm more favorable towards Southeast Asia. Tech has got a tough run yet. I mean, there's a lot of overcapacity coming in semiconductors. There's just a lot of people kind of not wanting to buy the tech story, now being skeptical. There's a lot of tension between the United States and China in and around tech. So if I was putting a dollar to work here, it'd be more down in Southeast Asia as opposed to Northeast Asia.
And is that, China reflation story in the future, is that what's driving some of the commodities that we're seeing? We see nickel prices go up 12%, iron ore futures also rebounding strongly. Is it optimism for the future that's driving this, despite the fact that China is still suffering from sporadic lockdowns?
It's a combination. It's that hope and expectation that China will reflate. I think Q3 numbers in China are going to be GDP, consumption, industrial production are going to be, you know, some of the weakest we've seen in decades. So China, I think, reflects. But it's also electrical vehicles. I mean, you're looking at record. We saw the market for electrical vehicles double in 21 from 20, and it's going to double again in the next couple of years. So EV production, right? Electrical vehicles are going mainstream. That demands a lot of industrial metals and minerals. And that's just starting with cobalt, lithium, you know, nickel, you name it, everything. That's Southeast Asia story. It's an Australian story. So that is just kicking in. If you order a Tesla today in the United States, you're waiting almost a year. That's how much demand is out there because of the battery. So I think there's a lot of lift yet, super cycle, in minerals and metals that's yet to be played out.
Yeah, but one component of the EV will be semicon chips, and we see the demand for that plummet quite a bit, right, in the past month, 11% according to the Philadelphia Semiconductor Index. You know, where do you see the supply-demand dynamics for semiconductor chips happening in the short to mid-term?
I mean, the short term, here's the problem. I mean, a lot of investors are looking, say, 24, 36 months. And if you look at the production that's coming by 24 and 25, semiconductors, there's going to be oversupply. All the plants, the new announcements, actually, you know, that's good for the consumer, should lower prices, but people are worried like this is causing a case of oversupply. So that's going to be kind of the trade. That's going to be a tug of war between, you know, underlying demand right now versus the oversupply that's coming down the pipeline. The U.S. is going to be swimming in chips by 25, 26. And I, the markets are always forward looking, they're pricing ahead. I think that's going to be an issue. So we're not there yet, but we've seen part of the chip problem right now is the global recession that's unfolding. You know, whether it's, you know, it's really China and Europe, I think we may, in fact, avoid recession, but still weaker growth. That's what's weighing on the semiconductors right now.
Joe, thanks very much for the chat. That was Joe Quinlan, Chief Market Strategist at the U.S. Trust Bank of America Private Wealth Management, giving us his take on some of the trends that he sees moving markets in the days and weeks ahead.
I find it interesting he's saying now go into European big cap now, but later see the opportunities in ASEAN markets, you know, especially in the quarter four. I liked his last point about swimming in chips. I think informing that perhaps I should buy my iPhone 14 maybe next year.
I don't think the prices are going to come down, Phil. Don't hold your breath. Anyway, launches for Malaysia will start on September 16 after midnight.
I'll wait in quarter one.
I think that,
when
you know, okay,
chips.
Being the cheapo that I am, I'm going to see how much the iPhone 13 costs,
yes,
right? What is the discount like? Because they'll have to get rid of that stock, isn't it?
Absolutely.
And we do know from the US, the price of the iPhone 14 is the same as the iPhone 13. So it doesn't make any sense. Who's going to buy the iPhone 13 unless they slash prices there? Ha! tip of the week from you. The Morning Run team.
My goodness, yes.
All right, then. But let's take a look at Oracle, which you mentioned earlier, Xiaoning. Oracle reported revenue that met expectations, but earnings did come in below analyst estimates. So revenue for its first quarter climbed 18% to $11.5 billion compared to a year earlier. And this is thanks to a contribution from recently acquired software maker Cerner.
Oracle received a $1.4 billion contribution from Cerner after the $28 billion acquisition closed during the quarter. Now, earnings per share was at $1.03 per share adjusted versus $1.07 per share as expected. Net income declined to $1.55 billion from $2.46 billion in the year-ago quarter. Now, Oracle said it would have seen 8 cents more adjusted earnings per share if it were not for unfavorable foreign exchange rates.
Which is exactly the question I asked Joe, right? And I think we're going to see that increasingly across the board. We already saw that with Microsoft earlier this year. I suspect that's going to continue to be the tone that we get from American corporates as we head into the third quarter results season. But I think for Oracle, what's interesting is really their cloud services and license support category. That is the really the golden goose that Oracle is actually having at the moment. So that segment, generated $8.42 billion in revenue, up 14% and above the street consensus of $8.27 billion. And it's so big that it now generates 30% of total revenue at Oracle.
But isn't cloud everyone's golden goose? Isn't it the golden goose of Alphabet, Microsoft, IBM?
Exactly.
Everybody wants a share of that pie because it's so lucrative and valuable. So who is going to prevail and win? What's their distinctive competitive strategy to differentiate themselves?
Well, you know, the market is saying, you know, you're going to look at the top 3-4 players actually grabbing market share. So Microsoft, I think, is definitely there because of their hybrid cloud. Amazon actually hasn't been doing so well.
Yep.
Maybe Oracle is giving them a fight for money. Even Red Hat at IBM, I do believe, wants that. We'll be watching this space very closely. I think the next people to watch are actually the Chinese cloud providers. But if you look at Oracle, 12 buys, 17 holds, 3 sells, consensus target price for the stock, $86.87. This morning, for regular trading hours, it closed at $77.08. It was up $1.17.
All right, 7:17 in the morning. We're heading into some messages. And when we come back, we discuss the next mega infrastructure project that's purportedly on the table and whether this makes fiscal and practical sense. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.